KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Welcome to The Treatment. Before Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross won an Oscar for their score for The Social Network, they had, and continue to have, a band called, oh yes, Nine Inch Nails. I recently sat down with them to discuss their careers at Variety Magazine's Music for Screens event. Here is that conversation.
Introducing a keynote conversation with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, interviewed by Elvis Mitchell, host The Treatment, KCRW.
I'm sorry, this feels like The View right now. I got to ask you guys, again, the first conversation with Fincher to work on what became Social Network, what was the first thing he said to you?
He had been reaching out saying, I have a film, I think you'd be perfect to score. I had not scored a film before. I was finishing a long tour. I was burnt out. And I was thinking, you know, it had been something I'd been interested in doing, but I wasn't at full speed ready to take on that task. And in my mind, I thought, great, serial killers, you know. No, it's about the founding of Facebook, you know. But I read the script and it was excellent. But I thought about it and I really didn't feel like I was ready to take that task on. So my real response to him was, I said, I think the script is excellent. I know you're great, but I don't know that I can. I don't feel like I have enough energy to walk into a new thing I've never done and take it on with a kind of with a level of intent that I would like to. So I need to pass. I don't want to sink your movie. And anyway, maybe 2 months later, 6 weeks, 2 months later, I woke up every morning feeling terrible about saying that. You know, and I called him back and I said, look, for your next film, please consider me. And I want to reiterate, it wasn't the material or you. I just didn't feel like I had it in me. And he goes, no, I'm still waiting on you to do this one. Come on over. So I called up Atticus and, you know, we drove over and saw an edit of the film and we were off.
What was it, because I just mentioned to you backstage that in the movies you've done with him, you start the score out as the studio logo is up. So rather than getting the brand name telling us what the movie is, we immediately, there's this aural environment that tells us we're seeing a movie. And he must have communicated that to you guys in some way. He wanted the movie to start off as soon as the house goes dark.
Well, when you're working with David, it becomes clear immediately that he has deeply thought through and has a deep love for film. So he's, I imagine, loves those flourishes and details of, you know, as a film lover, the music starts when the logo of the studio pops up, or when he's thought that through. So he kind of indicates, here's where I want music to start, and here's the kind of role of music. You know, informs you of that to a degree. You know, and usually it's one of subtlety. You know, but again, with David, your role as composer becomes interpreter and hopefully embellisher, but he's got a very thought through thing that he wants to do. You know, and I'm not saying that in a dictatorial sense. He just has thought through the process of movie making, and you quickly realize, okay, I'm here to interpret and hopefully deliver on that.
Part of the few, and I'll point this to you, Atticus, is just he's thought through every visual aspect of the film and the sound design, and he can articulate that probably better than anybody. But when it comes to music, there's got to be things that he's trying to draw out of you because he can't communicate in the exact same way he can with other parts of the film.
In terms of a musical vocabulary, like we spoke about before, maybe that's not the forte, but I think in terms of intent and emotional temperature, you know what he's looking for. And I also feel like he's someone who has a confidence where it is a collaboration. And, you know, there's a kind of continual conversation in terms of what may or may not work. At the beginning of Social Network, originally it was an Elvis Costello track for that kind of shot of the courtyard. So that was a radical change and kind of...
And what came in that conversation when you said, well, maybe this doesn't work, try something else? Because the first 10 minutes or so, the music is almost firing like synapses in the way that Zuckerberg thinks. We can hear a musical equivalent of that.
You know, the Social Network being the first film we'd worked together in, the first film I'd ever scored, was we learned something important, and that's what made us want to continue to work in this field. And that was... You know, at first I was curious, why is he harassing me to score his film? Because I'm not sure what I'm bringing to the table. What I am bringing is a lack of understanding of the medium and the process, you know. And when we, after that phone call, and we went to see a rough cut of the first, he maybe showed us 20, 30 minutes of what was pretty much the recognizable form of the film. You know, we had a quiet ride home together, kind of saying, how do you score that film? You know, it's not sweeping landscapes, or, you know, it's people arguing in a room that's wall-to-wall dialogue. And what happened over the next couple weeks was we had a bit of an epiphany about, or we tried something, which was, you know, if we think about what we are good at or have experience at, of writing songs and arranging music to fit that narrative of the song, and I think about, you know, half of our job is what are we trying to say, maybe lyrically, or a story are we trying to tell, and the other half of that job is how do we arrange a musical setting that supports that or works against that or complements it in some way. If we replace that story with the script and we start to inhabit what the characters are, we think they're feeling, suddenly the language of arranging and composing became a bit more understandable. So we wrote a bunch of music, about 45, an hour maybe worth of music of various things, not to picture, not to script, that felt like how these characters might feel, or how you might feel watching these characters, that felt in that world, that was somewhat informed by what, stylistically, what David had been talking about in terms of, I don't think it should be orchestral, and I don't think it should be heavy, and whatever. And that process was very rewarding to us. And when we saw that it resonated with David and the filmmakers, it seemed like maybe we've started to crack a code of how we can apply what we know how to do to a medium that we're unfamiliar with how to approach, you know, but playing on the strengths of what I think we can do, you know. And that kind of stripping things down to its emotional core is what we return to with every project we've done since then, is try to understand the story, try to understand the director's intent, and then strip away thinking too much about it and try to think about how it feels emotionally and generate and compose music that feels like it belongs in the story, around the story. Then extract that into more traditional film composition work. But having some blueprint of what to draw from helps us creatively. That makes sense.
It's a longer process.
Is it?
Yeah.
Talk about it a little bit.
Well, in the sense that often we'll be starting... the most extreme example was Dragon Tattoo, where we delivered an hour and a half of musical ideas based off the script for the Fincher to shoot with. And that might have been a bit excessive, but we were kind of... We went insane at that point in time, and I think the soundtrack album is 3 hours long.
But that must have been exciting to offer the music up before the film was shot, wasn't it?
I think what's interesting about that process is where we read the script and we have our own film playing. And I'm sure Trent's is different to mine. But then we'll spend a lot of time talking about what we consider the thematic material, and then what might be, dependent on if we've spoken to the director before, a family of instruments, you know, a set of rules. I mean, we found that certain limitations provide, you know, greater freedom, if you know what I mean. By setting, you know, in today's world, you can open up a laptop, you can have every drum machine that's ever been made, you can have an orchestra, you can have, it's too much. Well, where does one start? If you were to say, well, let's use monophonic synths and a violin and a whatever, I'm just bull at this point, but the idea of setting a kind of framework in terms of sonics and maybe certain rules in terms of the approach to the composition using those tools, I think it leads, well, in our experience, it's led to, I think, some really interesting results.
That's interesting, because when I think about the kind of work you guys do, there's an epic quality of assuming persona. I mean, in some ways, you're writing character stuff. You're actually composing, working the way the actors do, building character, and these songs, the lyric content versus the music are about that. But in these films you've done, that outsized personality, well, the exception of Immigrant Song at the beginning of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, it's almost like you're sort of saying, well, how do we step back from the way we normally work and sort of listen to somebody else, which has got to be an interesting thing to do.
It was cool, yeah, because Nine Inch Nails used to be just me in a room, and in the last however many years, it's been us in a room. And there's a comfort and a familiarity that it feels like we're working too slow when you get another personality. Shut up. We have a thing we got to do here, you know. But being forced into a kind of collaborative thing where you're not at the top of the pyramid and you're working in service to the picture and you're in service to the director, it's when it's the right director, when it's the right picture, it's incredible, you know. And it nicely complements the other things we do. And we find it refreshing, and it kind of re-energizes when we then pivot back to working on our own stuff. You appreciate it more, and that balance has been an interesting thing we found in the last few years.
It's got to become this sort of this conversation too between doing one kind of work and doing another. At a certain point, you have to appreciate the rhythm of stepping away from this thing that you've done basically the entirety of your career, and trying out something new.
Yeah, it's been. You know, I feel fortunate in the sense that, from the music side of things, it hasn't been a great couple of decades, you know, of the business collapsing, the infrastructure collapsing, the importance of music as the primary medium people listen to kind of going down, I think, with the advent of social media and distraction.
And to some extent, this happened to film as well. I mean, the kind of primacy that film once held in terms of being a thing you left your house to see.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a sort of corresponding decline in both these areas.
I would agree with that. But you still can go into a room for 2 hours, supposedly not be on your phone, and turn the world off, you know.
It's you haven't been down the street to see a movie if you're saying that.
Yeah. But anyway, my point is, it's provided a nice branching scenario, not just from terms of career, but just creatively. As we, Nine Inch Nails, have pivoted out of caring about commercial success, really, and focusing more on just what we want to do artistically, and not caring if it ever gets played on, I don't even know if there is radio. If it is, we don't care if it's being played on it, you know. If you want to listen to it, you can. If you don't, that's okay. You know, we're going to make what we want to make, and we're going to do that thing. And fortunately, we can survive financially by playing shows if we choose to. And it's fortunate, and we're grateful to be in that position.
It's funny you say that, because I've always thought of you as being somebody who's process-oriented, and that would serve you in terms of collaboration really well, because changing up the mechanics of the process has got to really
different mindset, you know. when we had the opportunity, say with Dragon Tattoo, of starting before the camera was picked up, we thought, well, let's eliminate that process and give music that can be there during the filming if necessary. But I'm just using it as an example of something we did that we learned probably isn't necessarily the right thing to do, because the consequence of that was we wrote probably 3 hours of music and it was too much, and it became difficult to kind of parse through to make a comprehensive score at the end of the day, because the end of the day all people are going to see is that film and that's all that matters. But we've got so much music that have lived in so many different places that it became kind of a jigsaw puzzle to have it make cohesive sense. And we learned, okay, we overdid it. You know, you can overdo it. You can go too far down in the hole, you know, so.
Anyway. But what you're talking about is the way all the great Morricone scores came from Sergio Leone. He gave him the script, Morricone wrote the music, and he would play it on the set for the actors, yeah. Which would really help him get into character.
That was the idea with Dragon Tattoo. That was part of it.
And did that happen? Was it?
Yeah, it was played on set, and I don't know if they listened to it or not, but it was certainly given to them.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell, continuing our conversation with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, taped live at the Variety Music for Screens event at Neuhaus.
In the case of working with Jonah Hill, who's an actor who's been doing this his entire life, but is directing it for the first time. What's that conversation like? What's the first thing you guys say to him?
We didn't. There wasn't a lot to do on that, and we came in very late.
And there's a lot of source music too in that.
Yeah, Scott Rudin called us up and said, "Well, I've got an excellent film that doesn't need much score, and we'd love if you have some time to do it." And it's Jonah's first film, and I didn't know what to expect. And we saw the cut, and I thought it was excellent. You know, and immediately he said, we'll make the time and figure out what we need to do. I didn't know Jonah, and we had a few conversations on the phone, and he has an interesting process, you know, that's circular. But it winds up at a spot that has really good taste, and it has been deeply thought through in his own unique way that it arrives where it does. And we had a pretty straightforward but good experience. And again, it wasn't an intense amount of work. There was just a few spots that needed to complement what had already been sourced in there with a lot of consideration on his part. And again, we really liked the film, and we thought it was something we're glad to be involved with. You know, and it was fun working with him.
This is something I've been thinking about lately, because apropos what you were saying, what's happening in the music business now is you can have somebody who never interacts with anybody else listening to music. You can stream a concert live, you can buy it, or take it wherever you want to get it from. But in the abstract, movies are still that social thing. At some point, you're hoping somebody's watching with somebody else, because it's not the same thing. It's actually engineered to be seen with other people. I mean, I know Fincher wants people to get those scares, or to hear that buzz in Zuckerberg's brain, yeah. Or to hear that shift in the music. Well, who's lying? Is it Ben Affleck, or is it who isn't lying in this movie? And the music is telling us all that. The idea that music in film still exists in the public sphere in a way a lot of the stuff you guys are doing might not has got to be a cool thing too, isn't it?
Yeah, I lament the death of record stores as an old person, but mainly...
Speaking to my good ear, what did you say?
No, I miss there being a place that is about the celebration of music. You know, you walk into Amoeba, it feels like people that work there probably listen to and like music. And you can tell by the character of the room, you're in a kind of church for music, where it's music. It's not something else in me. It's not dishwashers with some music. It's music, you know? And I'm kind of sad to see that disappear into, I guess the concert venue is where that happens now, to a degree, you know? I don't get that feeling walking into Guitar Center, you know? Maybe, but not quite the same. I hadn't really thought about, I enjoy going to see films, and I try to as much as I can, and I like getting out of my own head and being in a room, and I like seeing it with other people, and I like the feeling of the collective experience. I hadn't really thought of it the way you just said it, to be honest with you, but it's even more interesting when you've composed the music and you're in a room with people.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about that like that way before, you know.
We actually talked about this before. There's so much now of this idea that music has to be played all the time, and sometimes you really can't make out what the music is doing versus the sound design of the film, and so often music has lost a distinct personality, the idea of designing themes or melodies that carry over, and when we hear them in different keys or played at different levels, do something. That idea that music can be a supportive part rather than just something that's part of the atmosphere seems to be disappearing more and more.
Well, as films have become more product-based and streamlined product, you know, just like pop music largely has as well. And it's become a thing that's pre-digested, you know, sugar hit kind of vibe. The role of music, we think, often is just, could be anything. You know, there's lots of software programs now and sample banks that push one key and it kind of does the thing that's the chase scene, and push another thing and that's the, you know. To the point where I'm not sure why they still even hire composers to do it. Just no one cares, you know. People watching it often can't tell the difference in a certain breed of movie. Compare that to going back and watching something from the 70s or Sorcerer or Klute or something where so many things have changed, but what stands out, and I'm not saying that's those films are necessarily representative of every movie of that era, nor is the product film representative of every film of this era, but it sure feels more like art, and it sure feels more like music was there as a thing that there wasn't quite as many rules and expectations, and music's job is to do this thing, you know, but it's there to actually be music, you know, and we attempt in our, you know, having some choices to try to find films that still are approaching music as something that can be unexpected and can be less cookie cutter and less functional and more interesting. And then I think that comes down to who the filmmaker is and what the intent is. And anyway, that we think about those things, you know, because there's no real interest in getting into the quantity. Let's do as many as we can. Let's see if we can do one that sounds like that. We're not that interested in that. It's more about let's see how we can bring something interesting to the art form, you know, and be ourselves engaged in it, and hopefully do something that is in service to that vision and elevates it in some way.
Can I ask you, I'll ask you this, Atticus, what was it like to see Social Network in a theater with an audience and see that experience of having done this thing you guys were talking about?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I only saw the ones running up. I actually had a child born on pretty much the day it came out, so I missed that first week. We were in the hospital. But going back to Trent's point, I mean, what was interesting about that, and we both love John Hughes, by the way, but that Sorkin had actually written that song into the script. I mean, it was just taking that almost classic college campus shot that we recognize. I mean, they're all different, but we recognize that scene. Putting something that feels less familiar into a familiar scene kind of starts you on a journey where you're not sure where it's going to go. Or, you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, sure.
And I think that is, not to harp on about it, but that is the power of music. You know, you're immediately informed this is going to be a different journey to what maybe a familiar visual is leading you down.
And somebody who thinks like that, the way Fincher does, wants to do that kind of thing. He wants to basically, in some nuanced way, defeat the audience expectation by having this college campus scene and this visual that's supposed to make us feel one way. But then again, like I was saying, I get that sense so often in music of just his brain working all the time,
yeah.
that fever. And even in sotto voce terms, it's still always there. And just talking about John Hughes, I keep thinking about what that does when we hear songs by artists we know in a movie, even if it's the most disturbing thing, unless you know what you're trying to use it in some way that comments rather than compliments, we can disconnect from that really easily. And I wonder if part of the challenge you guys are doing with scores, you don't want people to disconnect. You want to engage them in the same way that you're engaged by music and by the way you use it in the movie.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we were talking about, this is kind of off subject, but First Reformed, you know, the Schrader film, the music doesn't come in until an hour in, and it isn't a big melody, but when it does come in, it's so... And I think that for us, what one of the things, beyond everything we've spoken about, that I'm grateful for is that our creative life in the studio has somewhat changed with the advent of the opportunity to work on films, in the sense that we might divide up our time where it might be a week of Nine Inch Nails or a week of the film or going in and out, you know, over a few days. And why that's been good, I think, is in just purely on an artistic and emotional level. One's able to invest in a way that feels kind of, you're totally committed until you can't take any more of, you know, you're at that kind of point where you need to switch for your own kind of cognitive juices to keep working. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying, that the back and forth of them. I mean, I think because for you guys, this is still a new thing to do. And there's got to be some stimulation that makes it fun to race back to the studio, or maybe they hit the road touring again, because you're bringing a whole new wind behind you, aren't you?
Yeah, and we're every project we take on is an immense learning experience, you know, because we have a lot to learn. We're excited about the process of learning and learning from each project, and even if it's we know we don't want to do that again, you know, whatever it might be, it's not familiar, and that's good.
So thank these guys for being here. Thank you guys so much.
You've just heard Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross speaking at the Variety Music for Screens event taped live at Neuhaus. The show is recorded by Blake Veit, who's associate producer, mixed by Kat Yore. I'm Elvis Mitchell, getting you closer to God. It's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.